Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this first hour of the show today, we'll be talking a bit about politics in the Netherlands and some of the trends that we see in Dutch politics over the last couple of years, and perhaps also how they are connected to, related to the same sorts of trends that we see elsewhere in Europe. The Netherlands has had, for a long time, had a reputation of being a very liberal and a very tolerant place. However, in the last couple of years, people there in the Netherlands have begun to wonder whether that is changing for the worse. We had back in 2002 the murder of a populist politician who was leading a very conservative movement, political movement in the country that, among other things, had very strong things to say about limiting immigration. He was assassinated, and yet his party went on to great success in 2002. More recently, just last fall, there was the murder of a filmmaker who had made a lot of people angry because of things that he had said and done in his films, things that he had said about Islam. And there again, it seems that even at that point, with a more conservative government in place, that some of the things that you heard people on the street saying indicated maybe there would be an even further move to the right. To try and get some insight as to what all of this means, we have here as our guest this morning Jan Nederveen Pieterse. He is professor of sociology here at the University of Illinois, also professor in the Unit for Criticism, and follows, as you might expect, Dutch politics fairly closely. Questions are certainly welcome as we move through the hour. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. So, again, at any point here, if you'd like to join in the conversation, you're welcome to do that. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, and good morning.
We really appreciate it. I thought what we might do would be to go back here now a couple of years and to talk a little bit about what was going on in 2002 when there were elections, when a more liberal kind of government that had been in power for a number of years was swept out by a much more conservative kind of coalition, including Christian Democrats and the party of this man, Pim Fortuyn, who was killed, got a lot of attention, and was killed just on the eve of these elections in 2002. His party went on to great success. And so we had a lot of people saying, what's going on here with this apparent move to the right in Dutch politics? Let's talk about this. Maybe you talk about Pim Fortuyn. Who was he? What was it that he stood for?
Pim Fortuyn was a sociologist, actually. He taught sociology at university, the Erasmus University in Rotterdam, and studied at University of Amsterdam, like myself. Interesting figure. He broke the mold in the Netherlands in several ways. He was a flamboyant gay. He preached one of his slogans was, I say what I think and I do what I say. And with him came a new culture, a new attitude of saying what you think, including open insults into the public climate. Typical of Fortuyn is that he sought publicity through controversy, which, by the way, he has in common with Van Gogh. Another thing that I have in common, Van Gogh, the filmmaker, is that they set forth a xenophobia in the name of progress. Fortuyn called Islam backward. The very statement through which he came into the media limelight was by saying, if I'm in charge, no Muslim will come in. Then followed statements, Muslim is a backward culture, Islam is a backward culture, incompatible with modernity, somewhat like Bernard Lewis, Fuad Ajami here in this country, less scholarly, more in the vein of street language. And so three persons that are involved in the, over the past 2 years, 2-3 years, Fortuyn, the filmmaker Theo van Gogh, and the parliamentarian, Somali parliamentarian Ayan Hirsi Ali, share this description of Islam as backward and so on and so forth.
As I said at the beginning, and everything that I've read about what's happened in the Netherlands in the last couple of years, it seems in one way or another to have made this point that here we tended to think of, and there were good reasons to think of the Netherlands as being a very liberal and a very tolerant society. What was happening in 2002, or is this something that perhaps had been brewing for a while, that led so many people to embrace this kind of platform that Pim Fortuyn laid out?
Yeah, I would say some major trends. One is the rise of a center-right coalition. We could say, that is a pendulum swing in Dutch politics. There has been a long period of a purple cabinet, meaning a combination of Party of Labour, left-wing forces, and centrist forces. And this was followed by a blue cabinet, blue in the Dutch sense, meaning more pro-business and more conservative. That coalition is now in power, and the latest trend in politics is that the Party of Labour is now back in force again. If elections would be held now, they would achieve about 50 seats. Because there is now again a protest vote against the reform of the welfare state that this government is implementing. The second dimension is the rise of figures like Fortuyn. and perhaps that is an individual quirk in the sense that Fortuyn vocalized some street level resentment of, I also know very good progressive left-wing friends of mine, well-known political scientists living in the same neighborhood as I did, in which there are Moroccans and so on and so forth, in Amsterdam, saying that he absolutely couldn't stand seeing Moroccan men followed 2 meters after them by a Moroccan women with headscarves on and so on. And that led to a kind of redneck Marxism. And we also have the ordinary redneck reaction. And the Dutch enjoy viewing themselves as so liberal and so progressive that they cannot stand seeing this kind of scenes. And of course, there are many other. Mm-hmm.
Well, we should remind people that the filmmaker Theo van Gogh, the man that you talked about, who was killed, he was murdered last fall. I believe this was in November, apparently, allegedly by a Muslim. It said a lot of very inflammatory things about Muslims. And apparently the proverbial last straw was this film that he had made that was extremely critical of the treatment of women in Islamic society. Now, that was sort of the last big controversy surrounding him. He was, so even without that, he would have continued to be a very controversial figure. But there does seem to be even within people who have sort of a left-wing orientation, some concerns, whether justified or not, about Muslims and the way they choose to live.
Well, there are two parts to your remarks, David. Mm-hmm. One, let me say a few things about Theo van Gogh as a figure. Mm-hmm. I talked a few days ago with an Amsterdam friend, also a filmmaker, who reminded me that Theo van Gogh was also a very sympathetic and intelligent side. He was the host of a well-known Amsterdam local TV talk show called A Good Conversation, which was a good show. I also remember seeing it. Van Gogh had a very Amsterdam style, very direct, engaged, self-assured, but also arrogant. And in that way, he was progressive in a provincial sense, which in itself is very Dutch. He was extremely provocative and insulted not just Muslims, who he accused casually in routine statements of what the New York Times journalist called bestiality with goats, but in more direct language is goatfuckers. He insulted Dutch Jews, nasty jokes about the Holocaust, insulted Christians, was in disputes on religion in various contexts, and had been fired from practically most Dutch media because of his offending readers. In summer, he made a film together with the Somali parliamentarian Ayaan Hirsi Ali called Submission, which showed Muslim women in transparent garb with Quranic text written over their naked bodies. So this was the provocative element that led to his murder. Now, the other part of your remarks concerns Islam itself, right?
Well, perhaps it was more, not so much we're talking about Islam as it is people's perceptions, particularly there. Is it because, and again, I suppose this we have to connect this with concerns about immigration, which have been a big issue for an awful lot of people. But again, I guess what I found it a little difficult to sort out what it is people are really concerned about. Is it they're concerned about immigration? Is that they're concerned with the social costs in a social welfare state of taking care of people who are coming there to settle? Is that purely about that, or does this really have to do with fear of negative concerns about Islam specifically? If we were talking about some other group of people, would it be as much of an issue? Those two things, it seems that they're all mixed up, and it's a little difficult for me at least to sort out which of those things are more important, or is one more important than the other.
All right. Well, David, let me take an easy curve and say yes to all of them. and then say, look, the core problem of Dutch multiculturalism is not Islam. There are about 900,000 Muslims. Only 20% of them practice Islam, and only 5% of those are conservative. The Turks are Muslims, but are generally not perceived as a problem because they are more urban in their style and more entrepreneurial. Often Moroccans are viewed as problems because the Moroccans come not from urban backgrounds, because most of them come from the poor reef mountains, peasant background, with very little cultural or social capital, and with a young generation that falls in between the cracks. There's high minority unemployment in the order of 10%. Native unemployment is about 3%. At the same time, there is now a generation developing of very savvy, stylish, urbanized, integrated Moroccans, a generation with PhDs and so on and so forth. So at any rate, we can talk about a problem of rapid urbanization in the context of a weakening welfare state. The welfare state was being weakened, meaning government support for housing, healthcare, education, social services, at a time when it actually needed expansion. And this is the price being paid for the polder model economy followed by the Party of Labour in the preceding period. There is a difference between immigration in the Netherlands and in the in the United States, say, because in the Netherlands, immigration means immigration into a social contract where citizenship gives a number of entitlements. Now, Surinamese people who immigrated in the 70s and 80s, no problem now. They shared the same culture because it was a Dutch colony, right? Mm-hmm. Turkish people, different culture, no problem, more urbanized people. Japanese people, different culture, no problem, they are prosperous. So behind the tensions of multiculturalism are tensions of class. And there is a potential for scapegoating when the welfare state is being squeezed and many ordinary people suffer. The country seems crowded and full. And then opportunist politicians like Fortuyn and now his successor Geert Wilders and shallow media types like Van Gogh can make political or cultural capital out of blaming Islam. But Islam is not the problem.
Hmm. Well, I think it's interesting that here we see many places in Europe, people who are worried about talk a lot about immigration. But there seem to be two very different kinds of situations. There are places in which the issue really is people who are want to come, and whether it's legal or illegal, it doesn't matter. They're coming to try to work. And in fact, maybe a lot of those people are illegal workers. In the Netherlands and apparently other places in Northern Europe, and perhaps it is indeed because there are places that have this very strong social contract, it's a different kind of migrant. There are people who want to come and they want to settle there, which can put a significant burden on the state when you look at all of the costs of settling people, trying to provide them with some education, you know, trying them to integrate them into your society. That seems to be the issue here in the Netherlands and also there in other places too.
Yes, so that is a general issue in European contracts. Emigration countries for a long time that turn into immigration countries and immigration into a welfare state is a different matter than into a free enterprise society, right? So France, Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium share several of these issues. We haven't had such kind of maverick types in these other countries and loud types as Fortuyn and Van Gogh. But Fortuyn was called the Dutch Haider. Mm-hmm. And in Belgium, we have also had figures that. So, yes, this is part of a wider issue. Mm.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Jan Nedevin Pieterse. He's professor of sociology here at the University of Illinois, also professor in the Unit for Criticism. And we're talking a little bit about recent politics in the Netherlands and perhaps how Netherlands reflect some of the trends that we have seen elsewhere in Europe. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And I came across a story. This actually is a little old now. This was published in the Christian Science Monitor in December of 2003, but I was really struck by a quote here from a man named Jan Niessen, who was actually not Dutch. He is with the migration policy group that's based in Brussels. But the quote I thought was interesting. He says, "It's as if in the Netherlands they realized that they are a multicultural society and are beginning to say to themselves, well, we always said we wanted this, but now we have second thoughts." And his last line in this quote is very strong. He says, "The time of formulating nice policies about multiculturalism is over." What do you think that in fact reflects what people in the Netherlands are thinking? Is it true that they at one time talked very favorably about multiculturalism, but now that there's terrific sort of pressures placed on Dutch society because of it, that people are having second thoughts?
I think reactions run across a pretty wide spectrum. So let me lay out some strands. There is a general reaction, fairly wide, that what is needed is a better integration program, one that is more thoughtful, and that also takes into account Muslim sensibilities. Don't insult Muslims, especially newly converted or born again Muslims. Don't provoke them because of the principle of tolerance, which goes very deeply, or because either of a Machiavellian stance for simply pragmatic reasons. You may be atheist or secularist, etc., but don't flaunt it in a provocative way. For young people, for many young people, multiculturalism in society is simply a fact. They have Turkish, Moroccan, Surinamese, etc., friends. They lead mixed social lives. At the level of street life, there is, on the one hand, a trend of very Dutch, very humane acceptance. Oh, look at these people in headscarves. They are so doing their best, and go out and chat with the Turkish or Moroccan cab drivers. They really appreciate it. And we must live with this. There is also a reaction of frustration, our housing, and etc., etc. Sharing social and entitlements. At the level of government, national government, local government, there is an attitude of one, reconciliation, and on the other, stricter policies in relation to immigration. The shock is greatest, in fact, and the division of opinion is greatest among journalists, artists, and politicians. That is, the colleagues of Van Gogh. I'm talking about the shocking reaction to the murder. And we have now, there is a debate going since November. That is in the newspapers practically every week, in which there are two positions. One is the position of reconciliation, tolerance, don't give offense. It's an attitude of pacification and respect for the weakest, for minorities and foreign women and children in particular. And on the other hand, a defiant secularism. And I'll give you a quote, the title of an article, an opinion article in leading newspaper, like the equivalent of the New York Times, written by one of the editors. And the literal translation is, "If we can't pester Muslims, we live in Eurabia." We should be able to tell the truth. Like Pim Fortuyn said, Islam is a backward country. We should be able to tell the truth about the oppression of women in Islam, like Hirsi Ali does. And otherwise, we yield to what the writer calls zimitude, that is, the submission, the super cautious attitude to Islam on the part of Christians and Jews who lived in Islamic lands. And there is a rejoinder to that position again, whereby a number of people point out that this attitude of super enlightenment is also a form of bigotry and fanaticism that may be as fundamentalist as religious attitude, a lack of less restraint. So this is that discussion going on there in journalism, art, and politics.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about something that now I may be a little bit out of date on this, but something that was being discussed in by local politicians in Rotterdam back in near the end of 2003. And it's my understanding that the city of Rotterdam experiences the pressure of newcomers perhaps more than a lot of other places in Holland, because well more than half of the immigrants who come go there. And that at that time, the city council approved some restrictions on who it is that could come there. And basically what they were doing was that they were imposing a kind of income requirement. They were saying that if you have money, if you have a good job, if you can support yourself, if you have income, well, then, yes, you can come. But if not, no, you can't. And apparently that was approved by the city council there in the city, and the populace there also thought that was a good idea. Did that go into effect? Is that still in place? Or has there also been a turnaround on that attitude as well? Because, again, I understand that here Rotterdam was a place that was a very strong kind of socialist city, and that when this sort of trend to the right swept through the Netherlands, it happened there too, and suddenly it became a very right-wing city politically.
Well, the big cities share this. In Amsterdam, 40% to 50% of the population is of foreign origin, like in Rotterdam. Establishing income thresholds for citizens doesn't work. It cannot be applied. It has no legal basis. But note an item in today's news. I just saw it in a newspaper alert this morning. There is a new European Union regulation being proposed that would allow fast access to immigration of wealthy immigrants, prosperous entrepreneurs, etc., etc. This is being discussed already long time in Germany, Canada, United States, etc. Fast track for entrepreneurial types and so on. So there is talk about this, yes.
We have a caller. We'd welcome others here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have that toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455 for anyone who'd like to join the conversation. We do have a caller here ready to go in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have some knowledge of secularism in France and the notion of the Republic, and I was wondering about secularism, the history of secularism. Is it comparable or different considering the role of the Dutch Church? I'm just kind of interested in the Dutch Church and secularism, since you mentioned it, that there's this big push to say, we don't want to become Eurabia. It seems somewhat similar to France, but I'm sure there's a different background in history.
Yes, thanks. Interesting. There is a difference and a commonality. In France, republicanism goes back to a very strong culture of laïcité, which goes back to the French Revolution, etc., which is the protest against the church. In the Netherlands, the arrangement is a bit different. The Netherlands tradition of multiculturalism is called polarization, and it goes back to the settlement of the Cultuurkampf in the early 20th century, whereby there were pillars of Catholics, Protestants, socialists, atheists, and they all got state support for their schools, trade unions, broadcasting systems, etc. Religion was recognized as part of the popular culture, of the public culture and the public sphere.
Religion was regulated, did you say?
Yes, polarization was an official government policy in force from approximately 1910 to the 1970s. But now a commonality. What both have in common in the current situation, the current frictions of multiculturalism, that both make a connection with feminism. The headscarf issue, the headscarf law in France, appeals to the protection of women, appeals to the feminist sentiment, and the same happens in the Netherlands.
Do they have any ear for some Muslim feminists that believe that they have a right to wear the scarf and that it protects them from being harassed in the streets?
Oh, yes, of course. And there are many progressive Muslim feminists, some of whom are local city councillors, one of them a councillor of city councillor of Amsterdam, a Moroccan woman, very progressive, who have no problem at all rhyming feminism with Islam or rhyming Islam with urban styles and cultures, and so there are quite a number of in between positions that got crowded out in the in some of the current debates.
And what about the Dutch churches? I don't know if I should say church or churches. How are they positioning themselves in this current move to the right?
Well, you should definitely say churches, because there are a few hundred of
right.
them, because the Netherlands specializes in denomination splitting. They position themselves calling very strongly the Dutch Council of Churches for toleration, acceptance, reconciliation, and join with the mainstream Muslim mosques, who, in reaction to the film made by Van Gogh in August, said, collectively agreed, we will view the film, but we will not react in public, because we will not be provoked and allow Hirsi Ali to set the agenda. Mm-hmm. And they also say, yes, there is a problem of maltreatment of women, but this is a problem of patriarchy and not a problem of Islam.
Mm-hmm. What about the Vlaamsblok from Belgium? Is that having inroads, or does that have an influence in the Netherlands?
Well, not really. It had for a while, but that was already 10, 12 years ago, and then it went up fast in a blip. And that receded again. And in the Netherlands, that was often kind of laughed off as, because in the Netherlands they love Belgian jokes. Mm. And this was viewed as an Antwerp Belgian joke.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, that again, does, we talked about this. We've talked about other places where there have been very prominent and somewhat successful right-wing political movements. The Vlaamsblok was one, and we you mentioned just in passing Jörg Haider. Is what has happened in the Netherlands in the last couple of years, is that part of a larger pattern, or would you say that there is something about Holland, the Dutch, the Netherlands, that is different? Or you'd say, well, it looks like it's the same.
Oh, well, look, let me give you a kind of broad answer for a minute. If we go back in time, I would say that the rise of fascism, 20s and 30s, Italy, Germany, essentially arose from the problem of the integration of peasant hinterlands into industrial society. What we now see is that we are experiencing global integration of peasantries through globalization, immigration, and with that come some cultural frictions. Put on top of that, the humiliation of the Muslim world, double standards in the Middle East, etc. And there is a very large problem zone, which, one, is a European problem, particularly because Europe is a neighbor to the Muslim world, and it is not a necessary problem. Look at the accession of the possible or likely accession of Turkey into the European Union. It is a European problem. It is also a global problem. Mm. And let's hope that the tsunami, the aid to the tsunami victims may make a difference. Hmm.
Well, just I'll go on to some other callers here. I want to make sure these people know I won't make them wait forever. But it seems to me that you're making what is an interesting point, and one that strikes me as being important. At least I haven't heard it quite discussed in such a direct way elsewhere, and that is, when you take a look at some of these political conflicts that we have seen around Europe in recent years, while certainly they may have religious dimensions and that they may indeed be about the clash of culture, you cannot discount those two things, that's the conflict around the issue of social class is very important, and that in fact it might be the most important thing. If you look at the reasons that there are conflict, you could come up with a list. But if you were going to prioritize those things, maybe you'd say class conflict should go to the head of the list.
I was living in Amsterdam, David, and I came here in 2001, and my kids went to a public school in Amsterdam, and more than half the kids in the class were of foreign origin. The level of education wasn't that great. There were pressures in the healthcare system. It had become very casual. There were pressure in social services, cutbacks, etc. And in the Netherlands, we all very realistically experienced this as the onmarch of neoliberal policies, and a friend of mine called it the cancer stage of capitalism, had arrived, and with that come a lot of conflicts. Now, add immigration, et cetera, and then you get these kind of issues, yes.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Caller in Belgium, over near Danville, that Belgium. Hello.
Good morning, sir. Mm-hmm. I'd like to take the conversation just a little different. In the United States here, we have some very severe drug laws, or very conservative drug laws, maybe I should say more, the better way to put it. And in the Netherlands, they're rather liberal. In the United States, we have a lot of crime that's drug-related. Obviously, that shouldn't happen in the Netherlands. Can you discuss this a little bit for me?
I'm so fortunate that this is an opportunity to speak about the Netherlands in its most favorite aspects, namely to be a model and guide country to the rest of the world. Yes, Dutch drug policies are about the most liberal of the world. The center-right government is trying to clamp down on that in part as part of EU regulations, yet at the same time it is being recognized in Europe that decriminalizing soft drugs is a way to cut back on the whole crime zone surrounding it. And that has been quite successful in many ways, and so France and Germany are also beginning to experiment with this, treating drug issues as a matter of individual choice or a matter of treatment rather than crime. Did I answer your question?
Well, yes, sir, in a way. So you would say that the policies that the Netherlands has been very positive?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. There does, in the reading that I've done here about what's been happening in Netherlands the last couple of years, there does seem to be a concern about crime, about increase in crime, and this tendency to blame immigrants. People say, oh, well, you know, that's the and I'm sure that same thing has happened other places. Say, well, that's the problem. You know, it's not us. It's them. It's the other guy. And this apparently worked to people's thinking to the point that somebody in the Dutch government, in fact, I think that this was a conservative justice minister who came in with that change of government in 2002, said, well, we really ought to have two kinds of sentences. He was talking about imposing stricter sentences on immigrants and less strict sentences on native-born Dutch. And there appears to be a fair amount of sentiment for that. Is it in fact the case that in the last couple of years there has been more crime? And do immigrants, are they involved any more than the average Dutch citizen in committing crimes?
Yes. There is a real concern with the lost generation that falls in between the cracks of Moroccans specifically, that they engage in petty crime, street mugging, street theft, bicycle theft, etc., etc. Nothing heavy, serious, but petty crime. And there is street-level irritation about that. The very right-wing Minister of Justice, Donner, proposes the closure of coffee shops, the coffee shop where they sell soft drugs, has just implemented a new rule whereby everybody over 14 is to carry identity cards. Very restrictive measures that are not really appreciated in the Netherlands because it reminds them of the German occupation whereby one had to have one's ID. So this is a trend that meets some popular sentiment, some popular concern. My own reaction is, and the reaction of some people, is to say, look, let this generation be, yes, implement some cautionary measures, but realize that give people a generation and they will be integrated and adjusted. And you see that already happening in a rather rapid way. But meanwhile, the concern does exist.
All right, let's go to Urbana, line two, for another caller. Hello.
Yeah, I thought this would be a good opportunity to mention how admirable it is that the Netherlands, along with Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Luxembourg, all managed to meet that UN goal of giving over aid of 0.7% or more of its GNP, whereas here in this country, if we gave the equivalent, it'd be more than $80 billion. And we're nowhere near that. So kudos to the Netherlands on that point, first of all. And secondly, I don't know, I felt kind of sad to hear that this Theo van Gogh had been murdered. He sounded like very much in the same vein as Lars von Trier from Denmark.
Hmm.
And I was kind of—I have several questions. I was wondering: is Lars von Trier pretty popular in Denmark? I mean, the Netherlands.
I don't know him. Can you explain?
Oh, he recently—he's a filmmaker. Recently, he did Dogville with Nicole Kidman, for example, and he's kind of a new wave kind of. Movie maker, but anyway, if you don't know him, it'd be kind of...
Yeah, it does ring a bell, but it's not a very loud bell.
Yeah, well, he also uses a lot of highly emotional scripts, you might say,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And apparently this Theo van Gogh was also involved in. People don't seem to appreciate that, but people just don't change unless they're put through a lot of emotion. And people should keep that in mind. And my main question, though, is having to do with this immigration thing, and in the sense of here in the United States, where there is a lot of illegal immigration, I personally find it very difficult to be very punitive about it, or very negative about it, because I know that this country has a rather long history of meddling in the affairs of Latin America, for example. And to me, it just seems, you know, when you compare the two things, that they're really not that dissimilar. And I was just wondering, in the Netherlands, you have Dutch Shell, and I don't know that much about their history, but basically when you're involved with oil, the oil industry, mm-hmm. it's a very dirty business, and you get into quite a lot of mm-hmm. messing around. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if Dutch Shell in particular, I suppose, but in general, if the Netherlands has some sort of history in its international relations with the Third World, for example, that might be a source of continuing resentment, that in a way would give us a similar situation. I guess I'll hang up and listen to
Thanks.
Your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your question. A few notes. The Netherlands is a small country. That means that the abroad is very large. It has high social density. It's one of the most densely populated parts of the world. Because of this, because of the social density, the sense of social solidarity is quite strong and quite genuine. Now, many people propose a mild immigration policy. That is, impose restrictions, but be mild in doing so. And secondly, go to the source. So this going to the source of the economic inequality refers to this high percentage, relatively high percentage of development aid, and also comes up again in the discussion among journalists and so on around this issue. I read a wonderful piece by Geert Mak, and his last sentence is, his recommendation is, I quote, go to the source. The uprootedness, humiliation and growing anger of the non-Western world, and he says this is a European problem. Mm. So this ties some of the concerns together. If you are really concerned about immigration, go to the source of that immigration, which is a matter of development policies on a world scale. Yeah.
We'll try to get at least one more caller. Bloomington, Indiana. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I tuned in late, but may I ask, how conscious are the Dutch about Muslim military conquests in Europe, well, in past centuries? I'm talking about the Muslim invasion of Spain and even into France in the Middle Ages. And a few hundred years later, they penetrated the Balkans. They took the eastern course up the Balkans and almost got to Vienna. How conscious are the Dutch of this history, and what do they think about it?
Well, Poitiers, the Muslims came as far as Poitiers, and Poitiers is rather to the south of the Netherlands. Vienna is rather to the east. So there is a consciousness. This is well known, very well known, but it doesn't quite have the edge that it has, still has, maybe in Vienna, where there is a Turkenmauer, a Turk, a wall against the Turks. And in France or in Spain. Look, the Crusades are not a popular motif in Europe generally. It amuses me when I see here in Urbana on Route 74 there is a Crusader church. Sir, this would be unimaginable in Europe. The Crusader complex is a complex that has been overcome.
In other words, they identify the Muslim invasion of Europe with the Christian Crusades.
No. Oh, sorry. Now I'm mixing messages here. Look, there is a growing recognition, especially during the past 50 years or so, that Muslims have made huge contributions to Western and European civilization. The European Renaissance stood on the shoulders of the Islamic efflorescence in the 11th century and so on and so forth. So Muslim advance is not simply viewed in terms of an attack or a conquest, but also a civilizational contribution.
We're going to have to leave it there because we have come to the end of the time, and we want to say thanks to our guest, Jan Nedervin-Petersen. He's a sociologist here at University of Illinois, also professor in the Unit for Criticism. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For being here. We appreciate it. Programming here on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Programs also made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry, and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. Coming up a little bit later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll be looking into the life of a woman you might call America's first feminist. Her name was Anne Hutchinson, and she lived nearly four centuries ago. She believed in the individual's right to free speech and religion. Some people in her day saw her as a heretic. Celeste Quinn, the host, back today on the Afternoon Magazine, will be talking about Anne Hutchinson with Eve LaPlante. She's the author of a book titled American Jezebel, all about her life. That'll be following the 1 o'clock news. The program gets underway, as usual, at noon with the customary mix of news and sports and weather and other sorts of things. And again, as I say, back today as host, Celeste Quinn. Coming up in the next part of this show, Focus 580, we will be talking with Ron McClarty. He is an actor, not perhaps a familiar name to you, but I think if we showed you a picture, you'd recognize him. He's also a writer and for a number of years has been writing novels. He has recently managed to get one of them published, one that he actually wrote a number of years ago, and the story behind how it got published is almost as good as the story of the book itself. It's titled In Memory of Running, and we'll talk with him in the next part of the show. Right now, though, we'll take a break for an update on the markets and news, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And with this update on the markets coming up on 10:59 Central Time, good morning. I'm Jay Pierce. The March wheat contract on the Chicago Board of Trade currently trading down 1.5 at 306 and a quarter.